Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. Today, the second wolf hunt season in Wisconsin commences. It contrasts with last year's in several significant ways. More wolves will be harvested, 251 compared to 116 last year. And starting on December 2nd, hunters are free to utilize dogs in the hunt. Wisconsin is the only state to permit the practice. In the meantime, scientists have for decades probed the complexities of balancing wolf conservation and humans' varied interest and tolerance of the animal. Last week, veteran wildlife biologists and young scientists went at the topic from various angles during the Wildlife Society's annual conference right here in Milwaukee. WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz listened in on some of the discussion and shares this report.
The organizers titled the symposium Conservation of the Recovered Wolves and set out to cram as much data accumulated by the rising stars of research into the session as they could. Enter Ramana Callan.
So I know this is a symposium about conservation of wolves, but our research question really grew out of a concern about conservation for plants.
Her collaborative work took on the question of how wolves could impact the deer population and how that would affect biodiversity.
So this is where the wolves come in. As apex predators, highly interactive species, it was predicted that they would contribute to a top-down trophic cascade that would benefit conservation of regional biodiversity. More specifically, in the Midwest, that they would have direct negative impacts on white-tailed deer, and that these would trickle down towards indirect impacts on those overbrowsed plant communities, allowing some of them to recover from decades of overbrowsing.
Callan and her team are studying 38 plots described as northern white cedar wetlands scattered throughout five counties in north-central Wisconsin. UW PhD candidate Jennifer Stenglein is combining a highly refined modeling tool with decades of data on tracked and tagged wolf packs that have steadily increased on the Wisconsin landscape. Stenglein is out to demonstrate the effect of additional human-caused sources of mortality on Wisconsin's wolf population. In other words, the stability of the wolf depends on more than the number harvested, such as what time of year and which members are killed.
Wolves live in packs, and they have this social structure. And so killing a juvenile disperser is very different impact on the population than killing a pregnant female.
Wisconsin is upping its harvest quota this year from 116 to 251 wolves. Stenglein looked at the possible long-term impacts to the state's wolf population.
The real striking one here is that if the entire study area in the model harvests at 30% per year, the population really tanks sort of uniformly.
Stenglein is quick to add, modeling complicated creatures with complicated social dynamics is complex.
And we're making them into something still very simplistic. And we're digesting the landscape into, you know, shades of yellow based on just a couple of variables. So this is just a model still, even though it's sort of a different type of model.
Okay, our next speaker is an old guy.
UW-Madison scientist Tim Van Dielen is a fellow wildlife biologist. He helped organize the symposium, which featured Dick Thiel, retired wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, as its closing speaker.
I asked Dick to come and put a keynote on our wolf symposium here. And Dick has a very interesting personal professional story that should be instructive for anybody who's slogged it out as an LTE temporary worker. But he happened to be an LTE when wolves began showing up in Wisconsin. He managed to badger his bosses into trapping the wolves and putting radio collars on, which became the beginning of an unbroken telemetry record over the entire 30-some years of wolf recovery history in Wisconsin. It's a fantastic data set to be able to work with. It supported the work that Jen described. It supported much of the monitoring that Adrian's talked about earlier. And I asked Dick to come out of retirement and come and just reflect a little bit on his remarkable career and put a coda on our wolf symposium.
And incidentally, I'm here to talk to you about my career. It was fun. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Thiel wears his retired look with ease, Hawaiian shirted and unrestricted by scientific protocol.
If any of you think that our state wildlife management programs are not fueled by what matters to the people that pay for that ticket, you're crazy. Wolves, I hate to say this, they're, you know, a lot of those people we'd rather not see them around. And so how do we get through this impasse? We are not really a Bureau of Wildlife Management. We are a Bureau of Game Management. And I don't know what the solution is other than the non-consumptive user groups have deluded themselves into thinking that they actually had a voice. They don't have a voice. And until they actually influence their public legislature to have a voice, then all of you that work for state agencies will be doing the bidding of hunters. Now, incidentally, I am a hunter, and I'm not really terribly proud of what's going on in the state of Wisconsin right now. We're being hijacked by special interest groups that are hunting groups, and that's just it. The problem is they're using something that I absolutely love, which is wolves. Thank you.
This was not the first time Notre Dame PhD candidate David Flagel heard Dick Thiel speak.
Right after he retired, he gave a talk at Midwest Wolf Stewards, which is a meeting we have among a Midwest wolf ecologist and biologist. He has a ton of experience. He's one of the top people to talk to about wolf stuff if you want to know anything about wolves in the Midwest.
The seeds of Flagel's desire to become a researcher were planted when he was growing up in central Wisconsin.
I used to do a lot of deer hunting when I was a kid. I used to do a lot of deer hunting and used to notice that there weren't a lot of oak saplings growing around on the ground, and that was just kind of like a huh. But then when I started going to college, one of my advisors, who's over at UW Oshkosh, gave us a paper from one of our classes talking about cascades out in Panama where they have these little islands where the predators can't get to. And that started getting me thinking about, well, wait a minute, wolves got kicked out of Wisconsin and started putting all these little pieces together. And so I kind of developed a proposal that I sent out when I was going and applying to grad school. My current advisor, University of Notre Dame, latched on to it, and he's like, we'll do this.
Beginning in 2008, Flagel started spending months at a time at a field station where Wisconsin borders Michigan. A pack of wolves tagged by the DNR regularly visit the plot. Flagel is studying the wolf's impact in reviving a forest, especially tree saplings, on which white-tailed deer often feast. He sees possible applications beyond this landscape.
My interest is what happens when you bring back a top predator that used to be there. Because this whole, with the wolves, it's the top predator in that forest, and they're gone. And this is actually a common problem throughout many habitats throughout the globe. The top predators have been removed from several systems, jaguars, lions, tigers, etc., etc. And the thing is, we're removing an entire forest that used to help structure those ecosystems. So if you take that out, what happens? Because a lot of the research we've done in biology has been done with those things already gone. So what happens when we put them back? And that's what I'm interested in looking at.
Meanwhile, UW Stevens Point senior Samantha Brunner is also waiting in line to talk with retired wildlife biologist Dick Thiel, who she first saw in high school.
What is your major? Wildlife ecology, research and management. I'm also a German major. Unrelated, but I like them both.
Do you have a take or an opinion on the state of the wolf, the future of the wolf in Wisconsin?
I really like wolves. I'm not a big fan of the wolf hunt, but I do understand if we have too many wolves, then we're going to feel the consequences of that. So I'm kind of on the fence about the wolf hunt. I definitely would never be able to kill a wolf myself.
So any of the information this afternoon you found most interesting? You know, there was talk about wolves could potentially be part of a restoration mechanism.
Yeah, I only caught the tail end of that talk, but it is something we've talked about in my classes, about how when they reintroduce wolves into Yellowstone, how it just changed everything pretty much. I think that's a really interesting idea, just that the top carnivores have so much influence over the ecosystem. So I'd like to see where we go with that in the future.
What do you think your next step will be? Where do you hope to land?
I'd like to go to grad school, and I'd like to focus on carnivores. So I've kind of been sticking to the mammal talks in general. I know it's very competitive, but that's definitely where I'd like to focus.
For Lake Effect, I'm Susan Bentz.
There's more information about the Wisconsin wolf hunt and links to past coverage of wolves from WUWM.com/lakeeffect. The news hit late last week that a new stream of sales tax revenue will soon be coming to the Badger State. Lake Effect essayist Avi Lank tries to put the development in perspective.
It's funny how money flows through our state government. Take the $30 million that Madison is expected to collect each year, starting next month, when Amazon.com begins to collect sales tax from its Badgerland customers. Already, some are saying that extra income is a big boost to Governor Walker's plan to enact a $100 million property tax cut just prior to his reelection campaign next year. Well, let's take a deep breath and put all of this in some perspective. To begin with, both the $30 million in sales tax from Amazon's customers and the $100 million that may flow back to some of them in what are sure to be much ballyhooed property tax credits are very small numbers in Madison finance land. Wisconsin collects $4.4 billion in sales taxes annually and spends almost $34 billion on operations. Making sums as paltry as $30 million in income and $100 million in expenses, mere rounding errors. In addition, the state will no doubt spend some as yet undisclosed sum, encouraging Amazon to build a distribution center near Kenosha that triggered its decision to start collecting sales taxes in Wisconsin in the first place. On November 1st, Wisconsin will become the 14th state in which Amazon, the world's largest online retailer, collects sales tax. Amazon is doing so not because it suddenly decided it was proper to send money to Madison to help pay for a property tax credit, but rather as a calculated cost of doing business. Under the strange sets of laws and court opinions covering taxation of internet commerce in the United States, only in states where companies have a physical presence must they collect sales tax. There have been numerous disputes about what physical presence, or nexus, to use the technical term, means. Is it something as small as a computer switch or a cell phone tower, for example? But the Amazon proposal, a 1 million plus square foot warehouse employing about 1,100 people just off the main road between Milwaukee and Chicago, is a physical presence that is hard to ignore. Hence the sales tax collection. Interestingly, Amazon does not collect taxes on sales in Illinois, which it would have been compelled to do had it built the facility just a few miles down the road. Illinois is a much larger market than Wisconsin, meaning that a physical presence in the land of Lincoln would have raised the cost of Amazon products for many more customers than does a physical presence in Packerland. Perhaps this is one time Wisconsin's small size helped it win a development project from Illinois. I don't know, however, because Amazon officials declined to talk to me. But it is fun to speculate. Getting online sellers to collect sales tax long has been a goal of state tax officials and traditional brick-and-mortar retailers, who rightly claim that not collecting the tax gives the e-tailers an unfair advantage. Online merchants respond that the complicated sales tax laws make collecting them difficult for a company selling nationally. For example, in Wisconsin, sales taxes vary among counties and sometimes even within them, such as the tax levied to support Milwaukee's convention center. But apparently, that problem can be overcome when necessary, as shown by Amazon's ability to collect taxes in Wisconsin when that fits its other business plans. Congress is considering legislation requiring online companies to collect sales tax, but like most things in the swamp on the Potomac, it is mired in partisan and philosophical politics. One thing the tax collections on e-sales are not, however, is a tax increase. Under the law in Wisconsin and most other states, you are required to add to a state income tax return the sales taxes Amazon and other e-tailers did not collect. It's right there on line 36 of the Wisconsin long tax form and line 26 of the short. As all of you good citizens actually do this, Amazon's decision to collect sales tax will result in you sending less to Madison next year. Of course, the smaller amount will not be much. Probably just a rounding error in your personal accounting.
Avram Lank was an award-winning reporter and columnist at the Milwaukee Sentinel and Journal Sentinel for more than 35 years. He lives in Whitefish Bay. The culture of celebrity meets 19th century portraiture. We'll learn about a new exhibit on at the Milwaukee Art Museum when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.